It's good to be with everybody this morning. I appreciate the opportunity to bring the message. The topic that I've chosen for this morning is prophets. Not the servants of God who spoke with divine inspiration, but the prophets of men, the economic device, the P-R-O-F-I-T, prophet. A lot of people don't have, as adults, don't have a good understanding of everything about prophets. I'm no economist. I know that children's understanding of prophets are different than adults. They have a very simple understanding of profit. If you've ever seen a child operate a lemonade stand or mow a yard for some money, they understand that what they're given when they finish the task, what they end up with in the box or in their hand, they consider that to be their profits. Children don't have a very good understanding of cost. They have a very good understanding of gains. They have a good understanding of income, what can they hold in their hands. But they don't have a good understanding of cost. So profit at its simplest profit in its very simplest form, it just is the income minus the cost. So in a very simple way, children begin to understand this if they're forced to pay their own expenses, to pay their own costs. They understand that everything that they're holding in their hands was not profit. Even though it feels good to have it all in the box, you realize that part of that money is already owed. So that's what I want to talk to you about this morning, is this idea of profit and the Bible's view on profit and how it is that we should live a profitable life and what that means. So the first time profit's mentioned in the Bible is in Genesis 36:26. If you want to open your Bibles and turn to Genesis 37 and 26. This is the account of Joseph's brothers plotting to sell him to the Ishmaelites. And in this account, in verse 26, we read, "Then Judah said to his brothers, 'What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let our hand not be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh.'" So initially in the account, the brothers considered that they were going to make an exchange here and that they were going to kill their brother and then have the gain of satisfying their hate for their brother, and their cost that they recognized in thinking this thing through was that their brother's life would have to be given up in exchange for ridding themselves of him and his annoyance and their hate towards him. They viewed that as being a profitable endeavor. But as they thought through the process, what they realized is that they could reduce their costs by not personally killing Joseph and just throw him in a pit and leave him in there to die. They saw that that was a more profitable option to them, and they sought that. So Joseph was tossed into a pit. And then finally the brothers sought to increase their gain by selling Joseph to slave traders and increasing their profit even more. So it's clear the brothers were shrewd in their affairs. What they went from was their initial income was to be rid of this brother, and they moved themselves toward a better income with what they considered to be a lower cost. So it's clear that the brothers were shrewd, and they went from getting rid of a spoiled brother by adding, in their perception, a spoiled brother, by adding actual money from the physical sale, and they reduced the cost by not having the guilt of leaving him in the pit, but just selling him as a slave. So we'll stop here to talk about another principle of this profit equation, and that's a term that many of us are aware of if you've ever purchased anything, and that's this idea of the hidden cost, right? Hidden costs are, at their simplest, defined as costs that you didn't consider or think about when you were making the purchase. when those are things that you didn't consider when you were setting up your equation of the cost benefit or the income to you minus the cost. There are things, you know, the problem with subtracting costs is you have to define them. You have to know what they are. Sometimes that's easy, sometimes that's hard. So this concept of hidden cost, the brothers considered a lot of the cost dealing with the situation they had, but they missed a few that they later came back to, and that is the effect that this treatment of their brother would have on their family, and they underestimated, I think, that cost, as we see later on. And then second, and most important, the fact that it would have on their relationship with God. Another cost that wasn't a worldly cost, but it was a cost nonetheless. This hidden spiritual cost is a major factor in the formula of profit as we look at a profitable life. And it's going to be one of the main subjects that we talk about for the remainder of the lesson. That this important cost that's addressed, and for most people in the world, it's remains to this day as the hidden cost of their actions. So let's look at 1 Samuel 12 and 21. 1 Samuel 12 and 21. It says, "And do not turn aside after empty things that cannot profit or deliver, for they are empty." So here he's talking about, what does he mean here? "For they are empty." Here Samuel's telling the Israelites that only the Lord can truly profit them, and only He can deliver them, and these two things are really identical. Their profit is their deliverance. So the empty things you speak about are the things of the world. We still have these things with us today. But he talks about these things not having any value and being empty. And that's a hard concept to grasp, because when you look around the world, you see things like money, and you say, well, money has value. It's not empty. It's not worthless. Property has value. Health has value. Fame has value. All these things are things that are valuable in this world. They're valuable to negotiate this world. They're valuable to make it through this world. So to call those things empty, that seems out of course. It's undeniable that those things have some value in this world, that they are tradable, that they are things that you can use to accomplish goals. So why is it that he makes this comment about these things being empty? Well, it's simply because he's speaking from perspective, and he's speaking out of a perspective of comparison. He's looking at the value of those things when compared with the value of what the Lord has to offer. So what he's saying is basically that these things in comparison have no value. He's relating their value to the value of God's love. People say something light weighs nothing if they've just lifted something heavier, or when comparing it to something that has an extremely great weight. Then they pick up something else and say, it weighs nothing. A lot of times people say this when picking up a small child. They're not being literal. They're being comparative, and they're speaking out of perspective to other things. And that's what Samuel's doing here when he talks about these things having being empty. Because in the long term, in the great sense of things, when you compare these things and give them perspective, they end up being empty. Samuel is calling on Israel to recognize the value of God, and thereby the cost involved in losing him. Samuel is trying to communicate to the people of Israel a hidden cost that they're ignoring. Let's look at profit in the Proverbs. If you would, turn to Proverbs 10 in verse 2. Proverbs 10 and verse 2. And there we read, "Treasures gained by wickedness do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death." Again, we see treasures gained from wickedness do not profit. We look at this from a worldly mindset and we think, again, that seems wrong. Because I know people who have gained many treasures through wickedness, right? I've seen this in the world, that there are people that get money and fame and property and health through wicked activity. So your first blush at this, if you're looking at this through the world's eyes, is that's absolutely not true. There are plenty of people that have lots of profit through wickedness. Again, we look over to Proverbs 11 and 4. If you look at Proverbs 11 and 4, this same proverb is sort of restated, but in a little different way that helps us to to understand exactly what he's saying. I think as Christians we understand, again, that he's comparing, but here it's really clear. It says, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. So now we see, okay, we're looking at this thing beyond just the world. We're looking at beyond just the physicalities of the world. And when you weigh it all together, when you weigh eternity, now you see that these things do not profit. This wickedness ultimately profits you nothing. And so we have both Proverbs are given in context that they're in the day of wrath. Again, all the physical wealth and all this income has a spiritual cost and a cost that comes due in the day of wrath. And like any debt or cost, there's a date it will be called due. That day is the day of wrath or the day of God's judgment. And it's again this idea of weighing the spiritual cost of things when you're trying to figure out whether something is profitable or not, not just weighing the worldly cost of those things. So I'd like to go again to another verse in Malachi, another verse dealing with profit. Turn to Malachi chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 14. Malachi 3 and 14. So it begins here. You have said, it is vain to serve God. What is the profit of our keeping his charge or walking as in mourning before the Lord of hosts? And now we call the arrogant blessed. Evildoers not only prosper, but they put God to the test and they escape. I'm going to continue reading, but I'm going to stop there for a second and make comment. You know, this is something I hear from modern followers of God a lot is, you know, I look around the world and where is God? He's letting evil prosper. He's letting bad things happen. Where is God? How is God weighing in? You know, what is God doing for me? Or in the worst case scenario, you know, what has he done for me lately? So that's basically the complaint that these folks are having here in Malachi, and that's what we're being called down for. And he's talking about those having faith in God and following God, and they're saying basically, what's the benefit, right? What is our profit of sticking with God? Evil people who aren't sticking with God are profiting much, so why should we bother continuing the way we're continuing? And then he goes on, and I think this is important to me. He goes on in verse 16, and he says, then those who feared the Lord spoke with one another. The Lord paid attention and heard them. And a book of remembrance was written before him of those who feared the Lord and esteemed his name. They shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts, in the day when I make up my treasured possession. And I will spare them as a man spares his son who serves him. Then once more you shall see the distinction between the righteous and the wicked, between one who serves God and one who does not serve him. Again, a lot of this relates to perspective, wanting what you want right now. The story of Jacob and Esau is one of those types of stories where it talks about the difference between wanting what you want right now versus looking at the big picture. I think that's one of the reasons that God gives us that account of Jacob and Esau, so that we can understand this idea of trading something that is very small in the very near future for something that's very big overall. Children have a very hard time with that story. I teach a lot of Bible class, and they have a very hard time with the story where the birthright is traded by Esau to Jacob for a bowl of lentils or beans or pottage. And this trade is made for what amounts to a large fortune for a bowl of food. And they have a hard time wrapping their head around the idea of why would he do that. That just seems extremely foolish to them. They can't wrap their head around it. I'll be honest with you, it's hard for that not to seem foolish to me. In the moment, he was very hungry, and he wanted to satisfy his craving in the moment. So he traded a great treasure for something very small, right, so he could have it then, right? So that is a very hard thing for us to understand in a story form like it's given there, in the actual occurrence that happened in that little short segment. But on a broad segment, we do those kinds of things daily in our own lives, where we look at something that's worldly, and we say we weigh this profit, the worldly profit, the income minus the cost equals the profit, and we don't put in the long-term equation. We use the short equation. We ignore the long equation. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But I think that story of Jacob and Esau is a good story to look at, a good remembrance of things that have occurred where God has related that to us so that we can know a greater truth. So back to where we're at in Malachi, this idea that God is paying attention is very key here. That God thinks very highly of those that stuck with him, that he remembers their names, that he has not forgotten them. This is a subject that's dealt with many times in the both the Old Testament and the New Testament. This idea that God pays attention to the details, that he's watching, that he knows what's going on, that he's not ignoring what's going on. Just because things aren't going your way doesn't mean that God's not paying attention. In many cases, the story of Job is one that teaches us that it's when things are going the worst that God specifically is paying attention to those things. How do you stand up? How do you bear out when things are bad? He talks a lot of times about things being good and people doing well when things are good, but it's when things turn and those worldly costs seem upside down and they don't align with the spiritual costs, that's when our true test as a Christian comes. Do we weigh the spiritual costs when we make decisions, or are we only weighing the worldly costs? So continuing, we see in Malachi that they were blind to this prophet of keeping the charge of the Lord. They either missed it or they underestimated that hidden cost of not sticking with God. They were looking at worldly costs. They were looking at those spiritual things. And they, like many, were caught up in what we're going to call the short equation, which, breaking this down a little bit, the costs are basically those same things, those difficulties, those discomforts, and those pains in life. And the wealth are the income are those same things that we talked about earlier: wealth, health, pleasure, and property. Right. So as a person of the world, when you're figuring out whether your life is profitable, you basically look at those gains in wealth, health, pleasure, and property, and you subtract the difficulty and the pain and the discomfort of this world in getting them, and then you have a good equation to decide whether you come out ahead or not, right? That's a very simple way of looking at your life. And there's a lot of people in the world that's how they look at their life. There are a lot of people in the world that's how they look at their life. And if that profit is positive and that profit is large, they consider themselves very successful. Sometimes Christians make the mistake of thinking that those people are very successful too, because we get caught up in that short equation. But there's a long equation that factors in those hidden costs. So when we start looking at the hidden cost, then we have a different picture. I call it the short equation because verse 16 addresses the hidden cost, the spiritual cost, and the hidden gain, the spiritual gain. So then you add into the equation, besides those worldly income and the worldly cost, the spiritual income and the spiritual cost of everything we do. And you have a very different equation. The problem is that most people operating in this world, they're operating on half the equation, right? The other problem is that, and we'll talk about this, that the long formula, we realize that the hidden cost and the hidden gains of the spiritual nature carry all the weight, right? So not only have you missed hidden costs, but you've missed the biggest, what we call key costs, okay? You miss key costs. You haven't just missed small and trivial costs. The world as a whole, when they judge whether they're profitable in their life, they're missing the biggest factors, which are the spiritual costs, the spiritual gains that they make. And so when we look around the world, we see that finally that profit equation changes a little bit. And what we see is that at some point in this whole thing, you end up with a situation where that that you have skipped a cost that can only be traded for another cost. So when you look at having the spiritual gain or having the spiritual loss, you either have one or you have the other. You don't get the spiritual gain and spiritual loss. You either get the spiritual gain or you get the spiritual loss. So the heaviest cost, the heaviest profit and the heaviest cost are, you can only have one or the other. You cannot have both. You cannot have the spiritual gain, right, and the spiritual cost at the same time, right? You have to choose. And that's why the equation at the end becomes a simpler equation, as simple of an equation. You go more complicated, circle back around, and get more simple by the time you get to the end, which looks something like this. So what you realize in the end is that there's a choice that you have to make. And you can have God, that spiritual cost, be subtracted from what you gain in the world, or you can have the world, that worldly cost, be subtracted from the profit of God. So your profits end up being that you get to be a child of God for eternity in heaven in the first equation. Or in the second equation, your profit is that you have to be without him for eternity in hell. So now all of a sudden you see the equation becomes much simpler. The problem with this is, and is that there are so many people blind to the equation they're working under. When they're figuring out their life, when they're making decisions in their life, they're blind to it. But this is the equation that we see then presented in the New Testament by Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's presented by Matthew in Matthew 16 and 26. In Matthew 16 and 26, it says, "For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul?" Mark repeats almost that verbatim in Mark 8 and 36. And then Luke, in Luke 9 and 25, says, "For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses himself?" So now we see very clearly that equation. And for Christians, our perspective ought to be this. As children of God and Christians, we have to remind the world that there are these hidden costs. It's our duty to proclaim to the world and to let the world know, hey, you're operating your life on a formula for success that's missing some major factors in it. And because you're operating your life on this formula, you're making all the wrong decisions. And even when you're making the right decisions, you're making the right decisions for the wrong reasons. So you don't even know why you're making those decisions, right? Those decisions are not even as profitable for you as they should be. So as the world looks at these hidden costs, as we try to point these out, we try to get them to consider these costs, just as what the prophet of old times tried to do back in the Old Testament, always reminding the Israelites of the cost of what they were doing, of what they were giving up, of how they needed to stop looking at the world and start remembering that there were other things involved here besides the world and the worldly profits and the worldly costs. Just as the prophets did of old, we have to do now. I'm gonna close with the mention of I started with the mention of the first time prophet was mentioned in the Bible. The last time prophets mentioned in the Bible is in James chapter 4. In James chapter 4, it's the last time I find the word prophet in the scripture. And in James chapter 4 and verse 13, it says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this thing or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin." So this the prophet here is a straight meaning of the word prophet. But I think it's interesting, it's the last time I can find the word used, whenever I was searching. And this verse calls us to immediacy. It reminds people that they can't make a promise. They can't say, I'm going to do this, and it being their power to put something off. It's not in your power to really make a plan for next week. All we have is today. All we have is the present. All we have is the time we have now. And so if we're going to call people to recognize this, to recognize this giant hidden cost that's going to come back and bite them, that's going to come back and ruin everything that they've tried to work for and take away any profit that they hope for in this world. The only profit we can hope for in this world is that spiritual profit, right? Is that at the end of the day, we remove what was in the world from what we gave God, and we come out ahead with God in His love for eternity. And so this verse is not necessarily tied in meaning to the other uses of the of profit that we've had this morning, but I think it's very interesting that it's the standard of immediacy, the standard of the fact that you don't have control about tomorrow. And so instead of always planning everything for sometime in the future, we're called to look at things now and remember that we're like a mist. And so that if we need to act on this, if we need to go out and teach others, if we need to do anything to claim this spiritual benefit, then we need to do it now. If we need to do anything to help others, we need to do it now. So I would say this, none of us are guaranteed tomorrow, and you only have the present to act. To act, to serve God, to weigh His love in your life and in your decisions. If there's anybody here who wishes to choose Him over this world, who have heard the truth, wish to repent, confess, be baptized for the remission of their sins, please come forward as we stand and sing this song.